There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. And the phone number, as it same as it ever was, right? 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Gets you through on the text line and the phone line. And reminder, too, if you're using that FM Talk 106.5 app, you can use that to leave me a talkback message. It's that microphone icon right there on the front page. All right, our friend Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation and movie entrepreneur extraordinaire is going to join us in 1 second. But I do want to read this here. Let's see. I guess that maybe this was that texter was directed towards Jeff, but I wanted to open up with this because, you know, Jeff was talking about for a couple hours, Louisiana's move to put the Ten Commandments in schools. And Jeff was pushing this idea that may not be the right thing. And I said to him at the end of the segment, you know, if we just are doing things because tit for tat, like, oh, there's Pride Month, so we're going to put that's not the reason to put the Ten Commandments in, because they did Pride Month, so we're going to do this. I don't think that's the real reason. And the texture says, great of you pushing against Christ in the Bible Belt. We'll say this. One sword, if we're going to go Bible, here, one sword sharpens the other, right? It's good to have a discourse. It's a First Amendment right to have discourse. Just like people pushing to silence speech they don't like. For example, the protesters against Israel on college campuses. Now, did I think they were goofy, hacky sack kids? Of course they are. And do I think there was some outside agitation in there? Of course there was. And did the second that they damaged property or physically got in the way or touched a student that was Jewish or pro-Israel? Problem. But just because you don't like their speech against Israel, you have to defend that same speech. That's the world we're in. And also, as you look at people say the separation of church and state, which has often been misconstrued, I will say, and here's my segue to talk to our buddy Cameron, my segue is this, that idea of the separation of church and state actually came from the other side. It came from, I forget the guy's name, but it was like a Baptist minister, old school, like even pre-revolutionary, that didn't want religion. He didn't want this. He wanted a separation of church and state because he worried that the state government would get into the religion and mess up the religion, right? It's the, hey, your peanut butter's in my chocolate. Your chocolate's in my peanut butter, whatever. That thing. So it came from the other side, actually, that they had talked about it. So, and we'll get into it later in the show, but as we do, here's my segue. That was way back, a Baptist minister, and my friend Cameron Smith decides to take on the Southern Baptist Convention as well as we get started. Cameron, is that pretty good? Is it a good segue to get into this?
Great segue. I love Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptist that talks exactly about what you mentioned. And it was because of their experience with the Church of England and the idea that the state would get in and direct the church and use it as a puppet.
Yeah, and that's because
we were actually concerned about.
Today, I think if you ask, if we did like a man on the street thing, right? We went out with the microphone. Most people would believe, and I'm not, if you didn't learn this, there's no reason you wouldn't, but you believe that separation was to keep the church out of the state, but it was actually, y'all, like Cameron said, there, the state out of the church. So yeah, that's a little history there.
Yeah, and I think this is a fascinating discussion because in our nation's capital, we have Moses, for example, in the Capitol, in the House of Representatives, I believe, with along with Solon and Hammurabi and other great lawgivers. And I think it's pretty clear. The First Amendment jurisprudence is very clear that in this context, if you want to say we're going to mandate the Ten Commandments, that's fine. You probably have to present those alongside with other historical examples of the law. And in that keeping, you can make it constitutional. If it's solely we're doing this and we're not presenting any other lawgivers, for example, it's probably unconstitutional.
And it is, it's one of these things, I believe, that if there was a push for this, why wasn't there a push for this 3 years ago or 4 years ago, right? I know there are some groups out there, but it does seem like it's a tit for tat. And when you do that, you're just taking what is of the legislative branch and making sure to kick it to the judicial, right? I mean, you're just doing something here that's going to, we know it's not going to, it's going to be challenged. So therefore it goes out of the lawmaking side to the judicial.
Yeah, and this is, you know, most of what Joe Biden has been doing with a lot of his ideas is, hey, I don't know if I have legal authority to do this, but this is going to be popular with the base, so let's do it and see what happens in court. And this is very much the same thing of, hey, we're going to do this. It's going to be popular with our conservative Christian base who will think that we're fighting a culture war. And
but they're going to lose in the court. So, I mean,
sure, I mean, sure. There's a way they could not. But yes, they're going to lose in the courts. And so they're going to spend taxpayer money on what amounts to a political campaign. I don't support that. But hey, if that's the way they want to do it and voters respond positively to that, I understand why.
All right. So to segue from that to your statement here, the Southern Baptist Convention is dead wrong about in vitro fertilization. Tell me how they're wrong about IVF. What did they say?
Well, basically, they just got us.
Hey, Cameron, we're having a problem there with the signal. Let's stand by and see if we can get this. We'll tell you what, if y'all back there, let's run the news and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:15, FM Talk 106.5. I think we took the audio iron and pressed out the wrinkles, and we have a solid connection here with my friend Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Good on your end, brother?
Yeah, I think we're good now, Sean.
All right, good deal. So, yeah, so I'd ask you, the Southern Baptist Convention, you said, is dead wrong about in vitro fertilization. So what did they say that's dead wrong? Give me your case.
Well, they actually spoke out of both sides of their mouth. They said, we're standing with families who have to use IVF for fertility, and we are excited about their families, and children are a gift from God. And, oh, by the way, we think the government should restrict IVF. And we are not sure that it is God approved and morally sound. And I just said, wait.
You gotta be one or the other, yeah.
Right. You can't tell me. And so I asked this fundamental question, and I'm a Southern Baptist, and I know many of your listeners are. Is IVF, the process of IVF, akin to partial birth abortion or not? Because we have a lot of Southern Baptists that would say, partial birth abortion, that's clearly human life, that is sinful. Like, we should restrict that as an affront to God's design for life. Well, in order for the Southern Baptist Convention's latest resolution to be accurate, then that has to be our understanding of IVF as well. And I wholeheartedly reject that. I have a nephew who was conceived via IVF, and I don't look like there's any moral suspicion as to whether that was a great plan and that my nephew is conceived in a way that's God-honoring. And so I took exception with it. I went through the text of the Bible and biology and said, there's three components to life. Without them, you cannot have a human being, and God's design is undefeated. It is a sperm, an egg, an implantation in a uterus. If you fertilize an egg and make an embryo, it will never become a human being unless it's put in a uterus. You can freeze it for 10 years. You can do whatever you want with it. If you don't put it in a uterus, it will never become a human. And I raise that as a rational basis for this is the point where I'm willing to be, and you know me to be, very pro-life.
Yes, and the most. And you live it, and you live it in your life. People that don't know, Cameron doesn't just talk about it. He lives it in his life, in his wife's life, in their family. So that's for sure.
Yeah, and as foster parents, we believe that life matters, not just at
bring
initial stages.
More kids into your home.
I never know who's going to be at my home. It's kind of funny. however, when I look at this, I see a lot of folks sort of head scratching, saying, life begins at conception. And to which I've responded to those folks that have sent me those messages. I hear that. That's a political slogan. Tell me where in the Bible you see God saying something like that. And what you do see is, I knew you before I knit you together in your mother's womb. We see womb mentioned over and over and over again. And I don't have a problem with God creating the soul before he creates the body. But the part about the body being created, he's very clear. I knit you together in the womb. And throughout scripture, it's the same thing. In the womb. That's an indispensable element for human life. And the idea that an embryo is a human life leads to all kinds of wild conclusions. You know, for example, am I freezing a person for 10 years? Do they have legal status? Should they have legal status? Let's just answer some of those questions. I come back all the time for my Christian brethren and say, is, according to scripture, is IVF sinful or not? And if you can't tell me that it's sinful and show me the scripture that defends that position, then you're pulling something out of First Hesitations. You're kind of making it up, and I'm not going to play ball.
Okay, let me just do this, though, to push back the other way, just for the sake of the discussion, that the womb was a thing that only, at the point, of course, of the scripture, would exist inside a woman. Let's say we're, you know, in this new age here, they create a artificial womb, right? And so now we don't have, you know, we don't call it a womb, whatever. This is outside a human being. If you implanted it there, then does that, you know, does that count? Is it just the, if you had a machine that acted like a womb, I guess, is what I'm asking, would that then change this?
No, because it's still the same ingredients. You know, call that an artificial womb. In my column, I call it a pod.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're making people in pods, and I tried to imagine the, like, most sci-fi example imaginable, that they take one of my brain cells, pull out my DNA, put it into an embryonic cell, and then raise that in a pod.
Right. Well,
here's the thing. According to the definition that an embryo is a person, then that new person is me. And it's clearly not. We would have the same genetic code, but I don't think anybody in the listening audience would say that the pod kid, we'll call it the pod kid,
okay,
is one, not human, two, distinct from me. And from a theological standpoint, I would argue that that individual has an entirely different soul, even though we have the same genetic code. And again, God's design for life is undefeated. It's still fundamentally a sperm, an egg, that comes together to make an embryo, which is basically a complete genetic blueprint, which in my science fiction model you could have. And even then, that doesn't do anything. It will never become anything unless you put it in a uterus, or in the pod case, a science fiction equivalent of the same thing. God's plan is not thwarted there. And I think we just need to kind of think through it. And it is an interesting discussion. We should have it. But the idea that, well, we can say it's not really sinful to use IVF, but also we need to get the government to really restrict IVF. That dog does not hunt, and I'm forcing my Southern Baptist brethren to either show me in Scripture where something like IVF is in fact sinful, or maybe just pipe down a little.
Or drop it, you're saying. Yeah, and I think you made it at the beginning of the conversation. You said they're talking out of both sides of their mouth, and I think that's a fair discussion. If it is this sinful thing and they can show you, then of course it should not just be limited, be gone. But if you can't prove it, but if you can't prove that, then, I think you said pipe down.
Yeah, because this to me jeopardizes our pro-life coalition. And what I mean by that is there are folks like me who believe that life is worth protecting from its earliest stages. And once the train leaves the station and 9 months later, we're going to have a human. The idea that we should have abortion then, I'm going to fight that. But up to the point where a embryo is implanted in a uterus, if you're telling me, no, actually, we have to really restrict IVF, we got to make it super expensive or ban it, no. I just disagree. I don't have the same moral reservations. I think this is a way. I'm very pro-life. I want more people to have kids, to have the ability to have kids. And to say we need to ban that, I will not follow there. And I think I got a pretty dang good argument. Folks can check it out over at AL.com.
All right. Yesterday, Juneteenth, you wrote about Juneteenth and the human dignity of our fellow Americans. I want to talk about that. At the same time, that's in the overall sense, specifically. You know, I've been talking about this a few years. Juneteenth celebrated in Alabama, for a state holiday, but only by decree of the executive branch of Governor Ivey. It has not been codified into law. So I want you to talk about this and then your reaction to that. In a state that we have a bunch of other holidays, why not codify this?
Yeah, I think that we should codify it. I mean, this is something that, let's be blunt, a lot of white people didn't really know it was a thing until a couple years ago.
That's very true. And we talked about that yesterday. Yeah. Somebody, I think Adam had asked on the text line, he said, what happened? We didn't hear about it. And then a few years ago, we started hearing about it.
Well, and frankly, I've asked a lot of, my black friends, did you know about this? And to a man and woman, they've been like, yeah, absolutely. What, you didn't? And the answer was no. And then I looked at it and I was thinking, I can't imagine being the last one to hear, I am free. I'm going to be treated like a human being.
Yeah.
As you well know, there was a lot of work left to do that, took time. But fundamentally, what happened there and what my piece is about is the only way that you can enslave someone is to dehumanize them. And I even quoted Lincoln and talked about his views on white superiority. The great emancipator still didn't get this idea. But it's that idea that for political expediency, in the case of slavery, economic expediency, dehumanizing people so you can do despicable, horrible things to them is something that we've done in America. And my concern is that we're moving in that way again, that we look at our political opponents. And think about it. We're gleefully talking about incarcerating them in either direction.
Mm-hmm.
If we're having that mindset of not respecting the rights of other people, not treating them as the full measure of human, then we can do horrific things. And Juneteenth really reminded me of, wow, that wasn't so long ago. And we seem to be forgetting the capacity of man for evil when we do not respect the human dignity of our fellow human.
Well said. And I said this yesterday too. The way I see this, this is the way I interpret the holiday. People can have their takes on it, but I see it not as a marker of failure. It absolutely does talk about the failure of slavery and chattel slavery in the United States. And we can go through all the places, but this is my country that we had it, but it's the aspirational portion of it that internally the people, the whites in the country fought a damn bloody war to preserve the Union and to get rid of chattel slavery. That they did this, yes. And aspirationally, like you said, still work to do, but made this change. The country changed.
Yeah, and I think that when we forget that, and I didn't understand this. People think the Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln just said, all slaves are free. That's not what the Emancipation Proclamation did. It said, in these rebelling states, you're free. And it wasn't until over 2 years later that became a reality. And this idea that, we should be celebrating just the Emancipation Proclamation. No, this was... It was the sort of almost rebirth of a nation, and that it said, we're getting rid of this practice. And this is when we finally said, all of you are free. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't great. There was a lot through Reconstruction that was brutal. We went through Jim Crow. But at that point, we said, you are no longer subordinated humans from a legal standpoint. And then we spent the next, frankly, till today, addressing that reality. And so that it's a big day and it's an important celebration. And I don't think that this is some woke addenda to federal holidays. I think it's something we need to think about critically.
I agree 100%. All right. Tell folks, first of all, how to engage in the further conversations about these subjects we just talked about and a whole lot more. How do they find you online?
Well, if you want to go to AL.com/opinion, you can check it out there, at D. Cameron Smith on X. My email is widely available to all the Southern Baptists who are upset with me right now. Come and join the conversation. I'll do my best to respond.
All right. And just a second here. From the movie world, what's the latest here on the Ballad of Davy Crockett? You said you were shopping.
We're rocking and rolling. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's available for you guys. And if you guys want to see content made by folks who, you know, have kids who are looking for, hey, how can we lift people up with lessons from American history, spinning some of those legends, the Ballad of Davy Crockett's there. And I appreciate you guys going and checking it out on Amazon or Google Play or wherever you rent or buy stuff. And give it a look and have some fun with your kids.
All right, good stuff. As always, man, I appreciate it. We'll check in soon.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there's Cameron Smith checking in. And we'll grab some text here, too, when we come back. I got some already stacked up. Yours at 343-0106. And a side note, too. Like I said, I guess months ago, my 13-year-old, my son and I watched The Ballad of Davy Crockett. Good fit. So if you're looking for a movie to watch with, you know, children that still, I think I said this the first time, it's a movie you can watch with your children that's not boring, right? I know there's some of y'all that are parents that are better than I that can sit through some of the kids' movies. I just go, I can't. I have to, like, clean the kitchen while they're on. It's a movie you will be engaged with as well. It's for everybody. It truly is, you know, it's like, what's the other one? Well, oh, yeah, my son and I last night watching, again, Batman Lego Movie. Lego Movie, right? Still engaging enough for parents, but entertaining for the kids. Well, completely different. There are no Legos in The Ballad of Davy Crockett, but it's that same kind of engagement. All right, 343-0106, Midday Mobile, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. That's during the break here. Donald Sutherland has passed away. Said here, this from... you've come from the family here. Donald Sutherland, the beloved actor who starred in scores of films from The Dirty Dozen, MASH, and Clute, to Animal House and Ordinary People, to Pride and Prejudice and the Hunger Games franchise, and won an Emmy for Citizen X, died today in Miami after a long illness. He was 88 years old. The 2017 honorary Oscar recipients, also the father of Emmy-winning 24 and designated survivor actor Kiefer Sutherland, and veteran CAA media finance exec Rogue Sutherland, CAA, confirmed the news to Deadline. So there you go. That's just 88 years old, Donald Sutherland. Think about the movies that they named there. Like, obviously, MASH TV-wise was a big deal. The Dirty Dozen. So what a, you know, for a guy that has seen not that many movies, I don't spend a lot of time sitting still, but Dirty Dozen, a classic. I remember watching that, like, as a kid, like on TBS or something like that, and going, I love that movie. There are a lot of people who ended up being famous actors in that movie. And then Animal House, need I say more. But yeah, Donald Sutherland, dead at age 88. Right, go to the telephone lines, and then we'll come to text lines at 343-0106. First up, David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean. Before we talk about IVF, my favorite role that Donald Sutherland ever played in was when he played a crazy old country lawyer in A Time to Kill.
Was he in A Time to Kill?
He was.
And I think I've seen that movie. I know I read the book, but I think I saw the movie, too. Okay.
He was Matthew McConaughey's mentor in that movie.
I'll be darned. Okay, there you go.
But so I am a Southern Baptist, like Cameron Smith is, and I actually agree with Cameron's position. And while I didn't use scripture to make the same points that he did, I did make this point to my Southern Baptist preacher that if you believe in God's creation, then you have to also accept that God's creation is perfect and exacting. you kind of like what Cameron was saying, that you have to have an egg, a fertilized egg in a womb for there to be any possibility of human life to develop. I like to use the analogy, you know, I'm just an old hayseed from raised in Mississippi and Alabama, so I like to use the biscuit analogy.
Okay.
If I have flour, lard, and buttermilk sitting on a counter, do I have biscuits?
No.
Do I, if I take that flour, lard, and buttermilk, dump it in that mixing bowl right next to them and mix it all together, do I have biscuits then?
No. I like this. I like this, David. This may be your best contribution ever. Keep going. I like this.
Now, if I take that that mixture, put them on cookie sheets, and stick them in a hot oven after 30 minutes, am I going to have warm, flaky biscuits?
Damn right you are.
It's the same thing with embryos in human life. You can't have human life until you have a fertilized embryo attached to a womb, like Cameron was saying. And I didn't know the scriptures that he quoted in his column, and so. Yeah, and so if you believe that in God's creation, that God created the heavens and the earth, then you have to also accept the fact that that creation plan is perfect and exacting, and you know, and you can't just say, oh, well, you have this over here, so you have human life, or you have this over here, you have this life, and here's the point that I made, because if you believe that fertilized IVF fertilized embryos are human life before they're implanted into a womb, then those embryos have the right, legal right, to have the chance to become life, which means that the hospital would have the right to implant those fertilized embryos that are no longer wanted by the couple that collected the biological material from into another woman that wanted to have kids that couldn't get pregnant without the consent of those parents. And I'm a libertarian, Sean. I'm going to give you three guesses as to if I would support that or not, and the first two don't count.
Yes, I get it. It's a no, but I want to read you this. I'm stuck on this. So Michael just texted in. He said, because I feel like we'll let the two of y'all discuss this, because I'm kind of on the, I haven't thought about this deeply, you know, on the IVF issue, other than just the politics of it. But Michael said the people who support IVF are simply making the same argument as pro-abortionists. They're saying it's okay to discard life in the embryo phase because it's not viable.
Well, I understand what he's saying, and that's why I slightly disagree with what Cameron said, in that it's not theologically consistent. If you believe that life begins when an egg is fertilized, then the Southern Baptist resolution is theologically consistent, because then you believe that that is human life and that it should be afforded the protections of that a human life is protected. What many people that support the Southern Baptist resolution are saying is that they don't support how the unwanted fertilized embryos after the couple is finished having kids is what's done with that material, because it can either be discarded, it can be donated for research purposes to science, you know, stem cells can be harvested from those embryos, and so forth, which, you know, is one of the facets of the complex pro-life, pro-choice argument when it comes to abortion. But we're not talking about abortion with IVF. We're talking about something completely different,
let me devil's advocate for a second here, though, that if you're going to say that the stem cell, these things that can be harvested there, right, then it's alive. There's life there, right? If you can harvest those stem cells.
Well, it doesn't at the stage that it's at when it's basically in the freezer, it has no chance of becoming human life because there's no implementation into the world.
Is this also, you know, I thought about this, is this pragmatism mixed with idealism? You see it sometimes in Second Amendment, right? That somebody who will be a strong, like I'm a pretty strong 2A person, but there are some things where I go, yeah, they've got an argument to make that thing may be, you know, that, you know, there's a limit on a bazooka or whatever it is. I'll throw something out there. So for the benefit of the rest of the 2A argument, I'm going to give up on something that may be extreme, right? That the person needs a bazooka. I'm going to say, okay, we're going to leave that be so I can make the rest of the 2A argument. Do you think that's going on in the pro-life world, that like IVF may actually go against this, but they realize that if you go against IVF, it could bring everything down for the pro-life stance. Like, you know, that's idealism, but there's a little bit of pragmatism.
Probably, but that's why it's just a resolution, and no Southern Baptist that has either had or will have IVF in the future will ever be kicked out of the Baptist Church. It's kind of like the Baptist boycott of Disney years ago. No Baptist has ever been kicked out of the Baptist Church for taking their kids to Disney World, and no Baptist will, because this is basically just a statement of belief, of a statement of faith that the Baptist Church has made as a whole. This is saying that what we believe should happen, but nobody's going to be kicked out of the Baptist Church for it. And kind of like with women being ordained as pastors in the Baptist Church, that, you know, it's a statement of faith that we've made as a body of believers, but nobody's really going to act upon it, seriously, because
so it's a law that's something that's not enforced. It's the old, like, you know, how the rest of us are not Baptists, how we take a Baptist on a fishing trip, how we keep them from drinking all our beer, is just bring another Baptist. Yeah. And
exactly your point. Yeah. Nobody's going to be kicked out of the Baptist Church for having IVF. This is just a statement of faith that
it's the rule, but it's not the rule.
Well, again, as a Southern Baptist, I'm kind of trying to explain where everybody's coming from. But I actually do agree with Cameron that, you know, that human life doesn't begin until fertilized eggs, implanted and attached to a mother's womb. Therefore, IVF embryos are not human life, because I believe that God's creation is perfect and exacting, and you have to have all of the conditions, kind of like with the biscuit analogy. You don't have biscuits until you stick them in the hot oven, and 30 minutes later, you got warm, flaky biscuits that I can't eat because I'm a diabetic. So.
There you go, David. Well, I appreciate the call and the analogy. Thank you. Well thought out. 343-0106. Your thought out, or maybe half-baked analogies, I think David's was pretty baked, but if you have some half bakes, those can come through as well at 343-0106. Gene says, this is what Gene writes on the text line. I don't know if this is true. I am not a scholar of Baptist religion. Before 1978, Baptists were not against abortion, just as are Jews today, because the unborn doesn't have a soul. Was that true, 78? I don't know that to be true, but somebody can Google that. Let's see. Okay. Ben's saying another, for Donald Sutherland, another great supporting role he played was Ronald the Pyromaniac in Backdraft. Ben, you're like, Ben's one of those movie encyclopedia people, though. Michael goes on to say, maybe it was a sign of how wrong Cam is on his opinion of SBC and their stance on IVF. IVF kills more babies in the embryo stage yearly than Planned Parenthood does in a decade. And let's see. Yeah, we'll get back to this. More people about Donald Sutherland. And as we go to the news here, Joshua says, Juneteenth, like most government holidays, is like a television on a honeymoon. Not needed. I would say this. Joshua, very funny. That is a funny way to say it. But when you set the beachhead and the benchmark of having the holidays we do, the state-recognized holidays we do, and you don't codify into law Juneteenth, I got a problem. If we want to say, no, we're not going to have any state holidays, okay, that's fine. But if you're going to start cherry-picking, no, codify it.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's 12:51 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. 343-0106 gets you through to the text line or the phone line. We get a couple of these. And by the way, I have not been able to. This is the thing about the web. So I'm trying. Gene had said something about the Southern Baptist, and their position on abortion pre-1978. I see a couple different things online. It's going to take me a little more time to get a solid understanding. I do know this, that, you know, if you look at the abortion question, right, the pro-life question, it for a long time was really attached to the Catholic Church. Not saying other churches and other Christians didn't have the same belief, but it was a thing that was attached to the Catholic Church. And then you then heard more, of course, from Protestants on it. But if you could look back at kind of the branding on it, it was a Catholic thing, right? Let's see this question. Okay, more. I mean, people talk about the Dirty Dozen. Yeah, that's one of my favorite, Donald Sutherland. If you didn't hear Donald Sutherland pass at age 88, Canadian, too. There's a lot of Canadian actors that come in here and take our money and our roles. Should we allow Canadians to come in here if they're going to take movie roles from hardworking Americans? I mean, really, this, you know. Maybe some push against, with deference to Donald Sutherland, he's passed. But just, you know, we push back at the Canadians flooding south to take our jobs in Hollywood. Speaking of the IVF thing, too, I saw this from Senator Tuberville's office. Said U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville joined U.S. Senators Bill Cassidy, James Lankford, Roger Marshall, Mark Wayne Mullen in requesting the Department of Health and Human Services conduct an audit of safety standards at fertility clinics to ensure human embryos are protected in their care. So this is going to be, goes on to say, as Congress considers legislation related to in vitro fertilization, the senators are seeking a thorough examination of what caused the tragedy at the Center for Reproductive Medicine in Alabama, of course here in Mobile. I get like the Mobile's at the center of this whole thing, as well as other failures at other clinics across the country that all resulted in destroyed human embryos and devastated parents. Additionally, the senators are requesting information about how the federal government collects and publishes data on fertility clinics so mothers using the IVF have accessible information about pregnancy, success rates, and other quality information when selecting a fertility clinic. With this information, policy runs out of the screen there on Twitter. But there you go. That coming out of Tuberville's office, I guess today, earlier today. And coming up next hour, too, I want to have this conversation because I got a dog in the hunt. So you heard Mobile Mornings today talking about the broadband and the question. And this has come up. Senator Elliott's brought it up on my show before. He and I have talked about it, about the rollout for broadband. We did interview after interview on the show about this because I was interested in this and how it would work. Remember, I got the interviews on. I said, okay, some of them were politics, but then I got the people. I said, how does it work? How do you connect more people in Alabama? Like, where are you laying the fiber? How are you branching out from there? Because I like those How It Works shows. We did a bunch of those. I need to gather up those podcasts and put them back out where you can hear them. But the cost difference, and I think it is interesting that government quite often, if not all the time, but I'll say there's probably some exceptions, but quite often government wants to have one solution to multiple problems, right? It's government issue, right? It's that GI issue. The GI, you're going to get this and it's going to fit no matter what. And that's that idea for broadband, where I think in this rollout, this funding for broadband, I think it would be good if we can, you know, connect more people to be able to get on the internet, whether they get on or not, but to have that connection, like rural electrification was, right, back during the Depression. Although I asked a lot of these people in Alabama, why don't we semi-privatize this thing, kind of like co-ops for electricity, right? If you're not in an area that has a lot of people, you're on a, you know, some REC of some sort, and people work together to pay for the infrastructure to bring electricity in. Couldn't we do the same thing for internet, have it balkanized, have it localized, more the state plan? But the money was allocated. You had the broadband outreach. And this question that Senator Elliott has asked has come back up. He's talked about on the show before about, is this the most cost-effective way to run physical fiber to these homes, that the last home way down at the end of the woods, you know, that home, the one that's not in town? What's the cost? Could it be as much as, you know, from, I've heard from $6,000 to $40,000 for some properties to be able to get internet too? And as somebody who lives in the country, and I live down a dirt road, and you turn off that dirt road and go down another dirt road. That's where I live. I'm way out in the country. Does it make sense for the state to allocate that, even if the money has been allocated, but don't you do more with the money if you spend less on each individual endpoint for the internet? And I am a Starlink user. And I use, you've heard this radio show before when I say I'm coming from the Western Command of the, that's at my house, it's Starlink. So not only am I running internet and my children watching TV, I'm using a lot of bandwidth on there with the broadcast that goes from my home studio back here to the station and through the transmitter to your radios. And it holds up quite fine. And yes, the it's not $6,000 to put it in. Now, you could give those, you could say, listen, if it's $6,000 to take fiber to one place, how many people could you give Starlink, the people at the end of the road, people like me, give them a Starlink unit? And they don't have to, you know, I don't want government paying their bill for internet, but it gives, here you go, here's the box, here's the stuff, set it up, and you can have, this is with, and then you could do more houses before you run out of money. Instead of spending $6,000 on one house, $6,000 with a Starlink setup could cover so many more houses out there. And so what do you feel about that? We'll talk about that when we come back at 343-0106. I actually took a screenshot this morning when Dan and Dalton were talking about it. And the speed I get, now there are fluctuations like anything, but the speed I get using Starlink is what qualifies as high-speed internet. I think anything over 100 megs is high-speed internet, and I get that. So would we be money ahead in the state? Probably, but it's not that one size fits all the government loves. Coming right back.